You're listening to RCR Radio.
Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. You are listening to River City Sports Talk on rcrradio.com. I am your host, Patrick Wilkins, and with me, as always, is Woody Powell and Ryan Kuiper. We got a lot to talk about this week. Obviously, the exciting news coming out of the Jaguars camp is the Blake Bortles era seems to have begun.
Hallelujah.
Right? Yes. Yes. The city of Jacksonville, I don't think, could be more happy with a loss than they were with the week three loss to the Colts. The second half was a completely different offense, a completely different team all the way around. And we won the second half, 17-14 in total points. I mean, so we took the second half. Defense was non-existent in the first half, which is very disappointing. We'll get to that, obviously. But big news out of Jacksonville this week is that Blake Bortles seems to be the starter from here on out. And words from Gus Bradley was that he just couldn't keep him on the bench any longer. So it's exciting to see. It's the start of a new era in Jacksonville, and hopefully big things come. I mean, he threw for 225 yards and a couple touchdowns. He did throw a couple picks in the second half, but he definitely showed that he's got the ability to extend plays, move the ball downfield, and really keep the defense from stacking eight in the box. If he's able to, you know, create targets and use the weapons around him, he'll be able to move the ball down the field and you know, run a productive offense. I think it's going to be it's a really nice time for Jaguar fans.
Yeah, it was a tale of two halves yesterday for sure. Those who came and brought their enthusiasm and brought some hope with them had it quickly dashed by the Indianapolis Colts and their offensive efficiency. They scored on every drive that they had in the first half and did not end up punting until well into the third quarter. It seemed like everything that they wanted to do, they could do. Andrew Luck shook off a sack on the first drive, and that was the last time that we put a hit on him in the first half. He sliced and diced the team up and down. We refused to cover the tight ends. I think that must be in the Jaguar charter. And they ended up, Kobe Fleener was a huge weapon there throughout all the drives in the first half. Then they mixed in some Dwayne Allen. They did. We make tight ends look like John Mackey and Mike Ditka out there. When really they have no business even being in that class. But, you know, what happened, we had to have a half in which we gave up 30 points to finally drive the point home to Gus Bradley that it was time to make a change. 30-0 at halftime, he's got to do it, and he pulls the trigger, and it's an instant spark, like Ryan said, and Patrick, who was a bartender over on the Colts side, said he hadn't heard the team cheer so loud since he's you know, been coming to the game. So there was a lot of enthusiasm. As Ryan pointed out, many fans left. I'd say there were probably about half the stadium was full for the second half, and everybody was going hoarse screaming for Blake Bortles. It was something to see.
Let me ask you something. If Blake started the game from the beginning, do you think it would have been a different outcome?
No, it would not have been. The Indianapolis Colts were going to win that football game yesterday.
All right, maybe they would have won.
But do they win 44-35 as opposed to, you know what I mean? Like, do they win, you know, are they able to compete? Does he not throw those two picks because he's got a half underneath them already? Like, he's got the ability to extend the play. He's got weapons around him. Clearly, David Caldwell has set that up for him. The offensive line only gave up four sacks as opposed to the onslaught that they gave up in Washington.
Four sacks. That's...
Yeah. I mean, it's...
But, hey, we're getting better. You know, we just got to take it in strides.
They only gave one sack to Blake Bortles, three of which were those Henny sacks.
And you know what, Blake?
And he avoided quite a few, so he's able to get outside of the pocket. He's going to use his feet, and he's going to extend the play, extend drives, move the ball down the field, and actually make us competitive.
That was such a weird play to watch when he avoided the two coming off the end there, and he just pretty much just turned around real quick and started running the other direction, ended up completing a pass down the field, and. You know, it's just kind of weird. His elusiveness is kind of like, he's not like a Michael Vick fast. It's just pretty much he plays the game, like, as far as angles goes, and he's he's fast. I don't know.
You hit the nail on the head, though, you know, with the angles. He knows how to avoid the rush, and he knows how to and when to use his athleticism, which is considerably more than what we thought he had coming out of college. He really is a terrific athlete, and it was showed perfectly on the play that you just talked about. Bjorn Warner was rushing from the right side. Blake Bortles fakes does a play-action pass, fakes to the running back, and ends up rolling out right into Bjorn Warner. Bjorn Warner has him dead to rights. All of a sudden, Bortles spins around in the blink of an eye and runs the other way, leaving Warner in his dust, and then throws a nice deep lob to the fullback of all players who had broken free. And that's exactly what Ryan is talking about, where that's a play that Chad Henne hasn't made since he played Pop Warner. You know, he's not going to be able to make moves like that and to beat the team with his athleticism and then use his brain and his arm to make a big play. And another thing I would say, you know, we talked about this at the last podcast, whether or not guys would play harder for Bortles than they would for Henne, and it was really up for debate. I think that debate can be over now because the team really, there was a spark in that second half. Alan Hearns hadn't even had a target in the first half. He gets a target, drops it with Blake Bortles. On the next time he gets one, he gets it deep over the middle, breaks two tackles, and is off to the races, scores. Blake Bortles' very first touchdown, a 63-yard strike, and it really gave the crowd a boost, and the excitement was just palpable at that point.
Now, what do you think it is, though? What do you think? Why are these players playing harder? It just can't just be because of one player.
I don't think they're playing harder. I mean, I think they're giving it their all every single time they're on the field. But I think that it's a spark. Every team needs a spark. There's got to be something that you can turn to. You look at all of the great teams when they're down; they've got a spark that gets these guys motivated to actually continue to play at the level that they should be playing on the field. And I think that they give it their all, but there's just. It's just an attitude about an offense and defense and a team. You know, a lot of it's mental. You got to be able to, you know, believe you can do it. And when you're not being able to produce at all with Chad Henne running the offense, it's difficult to even think that you're going to be successful. So why even go out there? But when you're actually scoring points and putting making it a competition, you're going to – it's a different attitude. So I don't think that they're playing any harder or any, you know, that they were playing less, but –
Well, but how do you differentiate attitude and performance? I mean, if you're playing with where you have a sense that you're going to win instead of playing waiting for another three and out, those are two completely different things, and you are giving more effort. I think your attitude dictates how much effort you put out, and when he gets in there, that spark that you're talking about, that's what feeds the team and makes them go out and push a little harder and give a little bit more. So, you know, I just have to disagree with you there. I think that is what we're talking about here. That spark, that belief that something good can happen makes you push it a little bit harder, run your routes a little bit longer, hold your blocks a little bit longer, and they because they think Blake Bortles can make something happen if he has the time. So, you know, yeah, maybe the effort is the same, but they're giving more over a longer period of time because they want to finish out all of their assignments because they know if they do, they have a greater chance of something good happening.
Besides the Blake Bortles coming into the game, what from this game, what else are we taking away from it as far as like positives go?
I think the play of Andre Branch is really good on the defensive line. He's definitely outplaying Chris Clemens in my opinion. That's definitely that you can take away. Scobie hit a 41, so you get free Firehouse. That's always great. Check your phones for coupons from Firehouse. I don't really know. Again, I was working, so I wasn't able to really watch it. You guys were there. You guys were taking it in. So, the offensive line obviously improved. I mean, you guys tell me.
Well, our running game is non-existent, so we don't have that. But our offensive line, for once, actually, you know, played better. They're getting better. A younger team's getting another game under their belt. Alan Hearns, you know, finally emerging again from that horrible game in Washington. Good to see they came off the injury. So, I mean, we got a bunch of stuff going as far as that. Cecil Shorts got himself a touchdown, so hopefully he gets more in the flow of the game. And Allen Robinson, You know, kind of took a step backwards this week, but I mean, still, he was there in the game, had a lot of good plays.
Yeah, no, I have to disagree with that. I thought he's developing a rapport, that is Allen Robinson, with Blake Bortles. There was a play when he got it intercepted on a deep throw where he took a bad angle, didn't challenge the quarterback enough, but there were several plays where he did, you know, make something happen, maybe not for a big gain, but I thought he was pretty solid, and you could tell that Bortles was going at him, you know, more so than some of the other receivers. I think when Marquise Lee gets back, it'll be interesting to see how things shake up and who starts to emerge as, you know, really the main targets. We got some good news that Clay Harbor, who is going to come back, definitely a receiving threat. Mickey Schuler, who we picked up off the practice squad from the Atlanta Falcons a few weeks ago and plugged in as a starter, was basically non-existent.
Yeah.
He's not an NFL player. I think you could say that a lot of our backups, you know, don't really fit that bill as being legit NFL players, and he's certainly one of them. But as far as other takeaways, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, Ryan's absolutely right. The offensive line that had been porous and really overmatched in the first two games played a lot better. Bowanko had a solid game. Again, I think we'll talk about this maybe in a few minutes about the play calling. Nobody likes these east and west runs that they're sending Gerhardt on. But Robinson ended up being the leading rusher on the day and saw a little bit more action. So maybe they're, you know, wanting to mix him in, which I think is a good thing. I think, you know, we've all been wanting Robinson to step up and have a bigger role in the offense.
Play calling was definitely better this week. That's one thing I did take away from it at the end of the day. When Blake came in, I just don't know what the difference would have been if he would have come in at the beginning of the game. How would the game plan have changed from Chad Henne's game plan? And whether or not they changed it at halftime to accommodate Blake, or did they stick with the Chad Henne game plan for the game plan they had for the Colts itself? So it's...
I mean, I think Gus Bradley's made it clear, and Jed Fish as well, that they're running that same offense. You know what I mean? They were running the same offense that Chad Henne was running. But Bortles is just a better fit for the position right now for the Jaguars. I mean, he runs those bootlegs, and he's able to get outside the pocket, which we were trying to do in Washington with Henne, and it just wasn't working. So I think they're running the same offense and a lot of the same plays. He's just better. So he's able to really extend the play and find his weapons.
Yeah, that's definitely that was the most encouraging thing coming away from Sunday, was seeing the offense actually operate at the end of the game. We did win the second half, 17-14,
and that's great. Yeah, that's really great. You know what I mean? Like that's a stepping stone.
Yeah,
you gotta crawl, walk, and then run. And right now we're maybe starting to walk. Maybe figure it out.
Maybe a little bit.
Two out of six and halves so far. We got the first half in Philly and the last half of Indianapolis. We could go anywhere from here.
Just got to put them together.
Yeah, absolutely. Together. One of these days we'll get two in a row and we'll bring home a win. You can take my word for that one.
So this Toby Gerhardt experiment, we just kind of alluded to it. You think it's going to work?
Unless this offensive line gets better and they're able to run north and south, downhill type of football, I don't think he's going to be very successful here in Jacksonville.
What if Bortles comes in, starts stretching the field a lot more?
That's just it. He's going to stretch the field, so they're not going to be able to stack the box like they do these past 3 weeks, which has really prevented Gerhardt from getting you know, carries. I mean, he's getting the carries. He's just not finding the openings, and really they're just bombarding the offensive line. So maybe it'll give the offensive line a breather as well. I think it just it changes the entire aspect of our offense, having Blake Bortles in there as opposed to Chad Henne.
Yeah, definitely. That's what we're all hoping for. You know, we want to see the operate. We want to see what they had in mind coming into the season. We want to see if it works or not, right? I mean,
well, I definitely think there was a bit of a shift in philosophy this week. And it's evident in the stats. In the first quarter, Robinson has two carries. Gerhardt only has one carry for a total of 3 yards. Compare that with the Indianapolis Colts. They've got 8 carries for a total of 41 yards.
We're talking Richardson and Ahmad Bradshaw here. We're not talking Adrian Peterson and Jamal Charles. So
That's exactly right. Yeah, the Colts are a pedestrian running team at best. They're really known for their aerial attack. Yet, you're right. They look like, you know, they're world beaters out there, the greatest show on turf with, you know, how they were tearing us up, you know, on Sunday. Gerhardt is a hard runner. He's going to stick his nose in there. He's going to try and fight for the extra yards. But unless he can get to the second level, and we've touched on this before, he's really not that effective. He can run over linebackers and safeties and corners. He can't run over a 300-pound defensive lineman. And too many times, that's exactly who he's facing, sometimes a yard or two in the backfield by the time he gets the handoff. So I think the best play that he had, though, was with Blake Bortles came in and they did a screen pass to him. They got him out in the open. He made an athletic move to jump over a fallen lineman, which I was afraid was going to take him down, and he kept rumbling down the field, and he really looked like you know, a force to be reckoned with as he was, you know, trucking down the field. Had some better wheels than what I expected, and I think that his receiving game was an underrated reason of why he was such a high priority free agent for us. He's got great hands, and that's something that Chad Henne wasn't able to take advantage of through play calling or a lack of time with the O-line. Some combination of that, I'm sure. But Blake Bortles, you know, with his athleticism, like we talked about, I mean, it's a standard screen pass, but it's indicative of everything that he brings to the table. He's just a little faster and a little better at executing all the phases of the position. So he makes everybody better. And I wanted to ask you about this philosophically, Patrick. What kind of effect does it have when an offense has the ball longer, like they do when they have Blake Bortles, where they're making plays down the field, when they're putting points on the board? What effect does that have on our defense, and where can we look to improve there?
Well, I think first off, it gives them some rest as opposed to just going three and out constantly, which we had grown accustomed to with Chad Henne. I mean, these guys get three plays worth of rest, and they've been getting, you know, the floor mopped with them pretty much with these offenses. They'll be able to get some rest. I mean, you saw Paz, he had 11 tackles. You had Geno Hayes, who had 8 tackles. Cyprian had 3 tackles himself. You know, the defense was playing hard. They were trying to make – they were just playing against a very high-octane offense that was clicking on all cylinders. You give these guys a break, and maybe they are able to play on all cylinders as well. So I think from that perspective, it helps the defense in that way. But it also gives them – you know, gives them a cushion. It's not like the defense is out there with a 17-0 lead. You know what I mean? It's 17-14 or something like that. So that's – able to, you know, keep the faith that, oh, yeah, we're still in it. We still have a shot at this. You know, you're down 30-0 at halftime against Indy. What are you really thinking? Obviously, you see what happened in the second half, so it's going to give you an opportunity to stay in the game longer. So I think the defense it's crazy to think that one player could really have that much of an effect on an entire team. But I think Blake Bortles is about to have that. I think that we can be a productive football team with him playing.
I think our defense actually isn't too far away from being a pretty good defense in the National Football League. What I saw, which was very evident from the beginning of the game, missed tackles. We just don't like tackling the ball carrier for some reason on our defense. And as an NFL team, professional defenders, we need to do that. That's point. That's 1A.
Fundamentals, absolutely. Exactly.
And so let's go ahead and start tackling a little bit better and seeing actually our defense. And like what he said earlier, for some reason we don't cover the tight end. I think if we learn how to cover the tight end, Telvin Smith was brought in exactly for that one reason, to cover fast down the seam tight ends who wreak havoc on the Jaguars. Hopefully we can solve those two things, tackling, cover the tight end, and we'll see where we're at.
Well, Telvin Smith has had a hard time getting out on the field.
Yeah, exactly.
They're bringing him along really slowly. Geno Hayes has been playing in front of him and has made some plays, but he's really more of a run stopper, you know, backing up the D lineman, being another big body up there that they have to get around. And Ryan's absolutely right. Telvin Smith is more of a hybrid safety linebacker or even corner linebacker, where he's got those man-to-man skills, he's got those zone skills, and the athleticism to cover a tight end if he can, you know, when they break off down the middle or run along, you know, seam route. We just gave up way too many open, too much padded space out there, too many small openings, and Andrew Luck was able to pick us apart. He was 31 of 39 for 370 yards on Sunday. Just absolutely had his way with the defense. And, you know, I'll agree with Ryan. I think that we're getting better, and I think that we're looking better. Guys didn't look completely as lost as they did against Washington and against Philadelphia, but they still just gave way too much cushion, and we had absolutely no pass rush. And we're going to take a break. This is RCR Radio. When we come back, we're going to get the perspective on that question from Patrick and from Ryan, and we're just going to keep on rocking and rolling. Thanks for tuning in.
Are we on? Okay, this thing is on. All right. So, hey, thanks for tuning in, guys. We're back. You're listening to River City Sports Talk on RCR Radio at rcrradio.com. The question we left off with was the pass rush or the lack thereof of the pass rush. As Woody had just mentioned, Andrew Luck is able to get 370 yards off in the air, threw for four touchdowns, picked the secondary apart. And, you know, the secondary has a tough time having to really cover these receivers when there isn't a lot of pressure on these quarterbacks. So it's the longer the play is for the receivers, the tougher it is for the DB, because they've got to follow that route and stick to it. But if there's no pass rush, someone like Andrew Luck will pick it apart all day long. So it's difficult to not see much of a pass rush when we focused in the offseason on the pass rush specifically. We brought in so many defensive linemen, two of which came from Seattle, which is where Gus Bradley had so much success on the defensive side of the ball. So it's frustrating not seeing a pass rush when we dedicated so much of our offseason to the pass rush and actually trying to improve this defense.
I just want the first half of the Philly game defensive line back. That's all I want. You know, we start off so good. We were the best team in the NFL for a whole half. And five sacks in that half, and then nothing since. So, honestly, like I said earlier, Andre Branch should be on the field a lot more. Chris Clemens, Red Bryant, where are you? Cedric Marks, you know, you're there. We'll step it up a little bit, you know, and then we'll see a little bit more blitzing. I mean, we don't blitz the quarterback as much as I think we should ever. I don't know if we don't have the ability, or is this not in the game plan, or are we too scared about, you know, the underneath passes to the tight end? Well, it really doesn't matter anyway because we don't guard the tight end. But, you know, we just got to step it up in all phases in that front eight.
Well, you know, you hit the nail on the head. It is a defensive philosophy. It is the cover two scheme that Gus Bradley developed in Seattle and brought here to Jacksonville. The idea is that you rush the four and you drop the rest into coverage. You keep everybody in front of you and you just wear them out that way, making it too hard for them to continually make passes downfield because you've got so many defenders in the area playing zone coverage. So we're a zone running team, and we try and get pressure with four guys. That's why we have the three defensive linemen who are basically there to be run stoppers, and then the Leo. And that's who's supposed to get after it. So Andre Branch and Chris Clemens have split time at the Leo so far this year. Andre Branch has been more productive of the two. I did see a lot of effort from Chris Clemens yesterday, especially defending the run. So I don't want to, you know, put too much of this on him, but he is an aging defensive lineman, and he also, I'm sure his stats were somewhat padded by having such a great secondary in Seattle, and we haven't duplicated that yet here. We're not giving our guys coverage sacks, so to speak. So I think that's a big part of it. Once our defensive scheme tightens up, once the zone coverage tightens up, the sack numbers will go up. It'll just be who is there to benefit at that point. I think Ryan Davis needs to continue to get snaps and get out there. I think Cedric Marks has played pretty well. I still think that he needs to take it to another level and put some pressure on him from the inside. Red Bryant was stout against the run yesterday. He's not really expected to give you too much in the pass rush, being, you know, the size that he is. He really is supposed to set the edge and deliver on the point of attack. So, you know, the pass rush is something that is a four-guy responsibility, and right now they're not getting it done. We look to the rest of the defense. We just talked about the DBs. Jonathan Cyprian came back this week, Ryan. We talked last time about how important that was. Did you see a spark from him? Did you see some leadership from him this Sunday?
I saw him playing a lot closer to the line of scrimmage than he usually does, which I like to see because he is a force to be reckoned with. He's probably one of our best tacklers on the team. So anything, bring him up in the box. I like that a lot when we do that. But as far as the DBs overall, I don't think we had that great of a game. I mean, we got pretty manhandled. Reggie Wayne always kills us. He's a Jaguar slayer. But yesterday it was especially every time I looked up and saw a completed pass. It seemed like it was going to Reggie Wayne underneath towards the sideline where he had just so much room to run. And we've always given that up to the Colts for some reason. We have a tough time guarding all their wide receivers, actually. And yesterday, Fleener ran wild. If it wasn't for a drop pass in the corner end zone there in the second quarter, he could have had a huge day. And he was wide open. There wasn't a person 10 to 20 yards around him. He just simply dropped the ball. So DBs overall, I'm going to have to give them a C- for the day. Cyprian, if he wasn't there, it'd be even a worse grade. So what can you say?
I like that. Linebacker play really hasn't been too spectacular either way. Nobody's really made a difference. Pause is yet to cause a turnover so far, and we're waiting for a little bit more production from that area as well. Overall, I think a C- is a rather generous on your part for the secondary. They got torched yesterday. Like you said, guys were just running free, all kinds of holes in the zone. So the defense is still a wreck. We talked a little bit about how Blake Bortles' presence might give them more of a rest, not have them on the field so much and have them playing better. And now let's shift the focus to San Diego this week. We are headed to the West Coast, which is a death knell for the Jaguars. We never play well out in California or really just past the Mississippi River. And here we go again. We're going out to face a tough San Diego team, a team that does pretty well in all the facets of the game. They're a little dinged up at halfback, but they still have Phillip Rivers and an emerging Keenan Allen and an Antonio Gates who seems to have found the fountain of youth. They're going to bring a lot of different looks to the table and be a real challenge for us. Patrick, what do you think the Jaguars defense needs to do against Phillip Rivers and the Chargers to have a chance on Sunday?
They've got to be able to defend the pass, which is what seems to be Phillip Rivers' bread and butter. They do lose Danny Woodhead, who is listed as a running back, but he's kind of like that scat bat as well. They do a lot of end-arounds. I'm sure they're going to continue to do the end-arounds. They're still going to run that passing offense that they do in San Diego. They just flew across country to Buffalo themselves and ruined that winning streak. They win 22-10 in Buffalo. It's just really tough to go to the opposite side of the country and play a game. You can't expect too much from your team, especially the Jaguars, whom have never won on the West Coast. So it's going to be difficult. I think the secondary has to be able to at least play with Allen and who was it that went off today or yesterday? I can't remember. They've got some stud receivers. Phillip Rivers is going to find them.
Yeah, Malcolm Floyd, Keenan Allen.
Keenan Allen was the rookie last year who had a coming out party.
Antonio Gates had like 3 touchdowns.
It's going to be tough. What's going to be really great is seeing the offense be able to produce and move the ball down the field and actually put some points on the board to keep it close. We'll see if that has a different effect on the defense. Maybe there's something that they can go for. We talked about the spark earlier in the show. That Jacksonville's looking for, and maybe this is the spark for the whole team, not necessarily just the offense, but for the whole team as well. So it's good to see.
Yeah, and Patrick, I wanted to ask you, we talked last week, and of the three of us, you were the one that was most anxious to have Blake Bortles come in and take over the reins of the offense. You made some really great points about, he's got to take his lumps sometime. Why not while the rest of the team is struggling and let them all build together? It seems that that has come to fruition now, and he's going to be the starter going forward. How do you feel any trepidation about him playing behind such a patchwork line and risking injury?
I mean, you run the risk no matter what, honestly. So the risk is there whether he's playing with a bigger offensive line or one that's struggling like Jacksonville's offensive line. I don't think I'm anxious. As I said, let him get his lumps now. Let him get a feel for the speed of the game now as well. So moving further in his career, I think you're going to see a better Blake Bortles throughout the weeks. I think week in, week out, you're going to see a better Blake Bortles because he's really getting a handle on the speed of the game. He's going to be able to adapt, I think, fairly quickly. And you never know. I think Blake Bortles is the guy. I'm not too anxious about it or nervous either.
And, Ryan, you brought up a point while we were at break about, you know, which wide receiver is going to emerge now to sort of pair with Blake Bortles to be his go-to guy. All the great quarterbacks throughout their careers are always connected to the great receivers who played with them, and it's usually, you know, one guy or maybe two if a quarterback spans over two eras. So Blake Bortles is going to be the guy going forward, so that means that there's going to need to be a guy who he favors more than anybody else. He has some, you know, chemistry already with Allen Robinson, Marquise Lee, and Blake Bortles haven't played yet together. Cecil Shorts is just coming back from an injury, but he was a recipient of one of the touchdowns. Or do you think it'll be Allen Hurns, who has really been the Cinderella story of this Jaguar team? Will he continue that ascent that he's been on and cement himself as the number one target for Blake Bortles?
Well, going back to the preseason and watching Blake Bortles and all the time he had back then, really he picked up on two wide receivers the mostly, and it was, you know, Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson. So those two going into San Diego is going to be interesting with the game plan, who they're going to be targeting, who they're going to be favoriting, and who Blake kind of has that connection to. So far, I think Hurns has a little bit over Robinson, but Robinson, of course, is kind of like that polished Philly coming into the game, who really, you know, a couple games in or two, he could definitely overcome Hurns just by experience and getting comfortable with Blake. Marquise Lee, hopefully when he comes back, he kind of emerges. He's been really overshadowed and by the other two receivers, and, you know, he really hasn't gotten too much breakaway from the defender, so it's going to be interesting to see what he does when he comes back. Cecil Shorts is interesting, just to see what happens with him and Blake when they start connecting and see where Blake is targeting him or when
he... Well, Cecil Shorts got a touchdown this week, so I think that if he can stay healthy, he's a fragile player out there. But if he can...
That was kind of a gimmicky play, though, you know, like a fake spike.
I'll take it any way I can get it, man. Yeah. I'll take it any way I can get it. He is sitting on my bench, so maybe he has a coming out party this week.
I hope he comes out and becomes, you know, one of the best wide receivers in the league. It's just,
I think that's a good problem to have when you've got someone like Marquise Lee on the bench. And as Woody said during the break, it's kind of going to be like whoever can play is going to play. If we have someone out, there's someone there that can fill the role quickly, because we do have quite a few receivers that are injury prone. All four of them have suffered injuries this season, so it's going to be kind of like a musical chairs, a merry-go-round as such. But I think that it's a good problem to have. I think that when you have weapons and you've got people on the bench, it makes your team better. So it's good. Blake Bortles has got to be loving life. Obviously, the offensive line needs to play better. But Blake Bortles is loving the weapons he's got.
Well, and it's interesting to me, it's still early in the season. The highest touted guy, the guy that we took with the earliest pick, is Marquise Lee, and he has really been the least productive of the three so far this season. It's still really early. He missed last game with an injury. He's going to miss the San Diego game with an injury, and I'm hoping that he doesn't get too far behind. He's got a lot of natural ability. He doesn't have the size, but he's got a lot of intangibles. He's you know, sort of faster than he looks, faster than he runs, somebody who's quicker in pads and can really make things happen, yet he's really been overshadowed. Here he was, the highest touted of the three easily, coming out of USC, the Biletnikoff Award winner during his junior year, had a rough senior year which had him slide to the second round. Jacksonville takes him, hoping for somebody to come in and bring some consistency at a position that has just been ravaged here for the last 14 years. And he shows promise. He plays pretty well in the preseason. He has a few catches in the first game, but he's really sort of fallen off, I guess, with the injury as well. And then here comes Allen Robinson out of Penn State, a guy with a good pedigree himself, a guy with the height, the physicality that you look for in a wide receiver in today's NFL, a real red zone threat. And then, of course, the ace in the hole, Allen Hurns, undrafted free agent, former Miami Hurricane, played with Jed Fish when Jed Fish was the OC. There comes in, teaches Marquise Lee the playbook. Marquise Lee thanks him, or is very gracious to Allen Hurns for helping him get familiar with it. And this is a guy who has just taken advantage of every opportunity that he's had. He had a terrible drop in Washington, but he came back this week, made a catch down the middle of the field, broke a couple of tackles, and sprinted in for a touchdown. Can't overstate what that means for a quarterback to be able to trust a guy to make a move like that. It boosts the morale of the entire offense because now they think that they've got a playmaker to go with their new quarterback who looks like he is the real deal. So there's a lot of positives out there. They're going out to San Diego. They're going to have to make the long trip out there. It's going to affect their timing. We're still dealing with rookie wide receivers who aren't used to these long treks across the country playing like this. But as Patrick pointed out, San Diego's coming back from Buffalo. They may be overlooking us because we've been such a doormat in these first three games. We might catch them off guard in a similar fashion to the way that the Chargers caught the Seahawks off guard last week. So who knows? It's anybody's guess. Blake Bortles, if he's got the magic, then anything could happen at this point. Ryan, do you think that we'll be competitive in the game against San Diego? Do you have it in you to give us a chance to win this game?
A chance to win, yes. There's always a chance to win any given Sunday. Always have a chance. But the odds are severely stacked up against us. One, we've never won in San Diego. We go in. Overall record against San Diego is 2-4. We're 2-2 at home against them, 0-2 away. And it's just tough. Tough going cross-country, tough going in with a rookie quarterback, tough going in with a wide receiver core as young as ours. And it's just one of those things that I'll be watching, I'll be hoping for a win, but in the end, if we have a close game, it's almost a moral victory for me.
Yeah, I mean, you want to see points on the board, but it's a tough game to win. So it'll be interesting to see how they respond to the trek and if they're able to make it close. I think that we're going to see a different team. I think that we've got good things happening. As we mentioned earlier in the show, we did win the second half, 17-14 in that ball game. Yep. So it's going to be interesting to see if we can ride that momentum and continue to play at the level that we were in the second half. So I think that you never want to go into a game thinking you're going to lose as a player, but as a fan, I think you can say that you know you're going to lose, and I think that we're going to lose either we're going to get our asses handed to us or we're going to be able to keep it close, but I think we're definitely walking away. We're coming home 0-4 with Pittsburgh week 5. It's a tough 5 weeks.
Well, let's go ahead and go around and see like what if we did win. What are the keys to victory? For you two.
Keys to victory. Well, got to start on the defensive side.
You got to drop your prediction, your score.
You got it. I'm ready to fire with that one. I think we got to start with the defense. We've got to figure out some personnel changes, get some fundamental coaching going on this week as we make the trip out to San Diego. We need better tackling. We need to tighten up our zone coverage, and we need to get some fresh legs out there rushing the passer. They need to either rotate more guys in there or, as Ryan suggested, stick with a couple of pass rushers, in particular Andre Branch, and let him continually go at his tackle and try and get to the quarterback. The jury's still out on the best way to go about it. It's we have a defense that's not designed to get a lot of sacks in the first place, but you would like to see more than what we needed, or what we've had. I think my key to the game then is for that defensive line to get some pressure, for Cinderic Marks to get a sack up the middle, for Ziggy Hood to reemerge as he did in the first half of Philadelphia, Chris Clemons to step up his game, and Red Bryant to really stay the consistent force that he's been against the run. We need those four guys to really step up their game and bring it on the offensive side of the ball. I just want Blake Bortles to go out there and continue to demonstrate his athleticism, to continue to create as he goes. I like that he's already audibling in the playbook, and I want to see him take command and look like he was, you know, made to play the position and play as well as we all think that he can. So I just want him to continue to look poised. I know he's going to make mistakes. I don't want him to be afraid to make mistakes. I want him to challenge and throw the ball downfield. That's the only way we're going to be able to get the guys out of the box to give Gerhardt a shot. So those are my keys to the game on defense and offense. With that being said, San Diego is a tough opponent anytime, but especially in San Diego when you're flying all the way from Jacksonville. I think it's going to get away from us, and I think that San Diego is going to win the game 37-20, I'm looking forward to those 20 points. Patrick?
I think defense has to step up, obviously, giving up 30 points in the first half to a very similar offense that we'll see in San Diego this week is unacceptable. You got to be able to hold your own, at least in the first half, when you still have some legs about you, even if you are playing quite a bit. So I think that that's going to be our main focus. Obviously, you want to see what the offense is going to do with Blake Bortles playing, but I think that it's not even going to be close. I'm going to say 38-14, San Diego. Again, I have just an issue with not being able to run, and until I actually see it, I'm just skeptic that I'm pretty skeptic that we'll be able to run the ball. So I'm going to say 38-14, unfortunately, coming back home week five against the Steelers, 0-4, against a very hot Pittsburgh team right now. So that's going to be pretty tough.
Yeah, I'm almost on the same line with you guys. I think a key to victory is going to be our running game. If we can at least get some running games, just any type of upfield and, you know, any type of yardage per carry. Like right now we're like negative yards per carry for the last game. So maybe if we can get, you know, some type of stretch, we might be able to see a passing game to open up. And from there on out, the Jaguars overall, the whole team needs to play better. Just do your job, as Gus Bradley would say. The defense, cover the tight end. Get some pressure on the quarterback. Do your job. Tackle. If we do all those things, we might have a chance here, because, you know, Phillip Rivers is coming in, you know, their wide receiving core is at, you know, a top notch right now, but their running backs right now, they're down to their third string running back, Donald Brown, who's actually a very good third string running back, and well, hopefully we don't make him look like the emergence of Walter Payton this upcoming weekend. But either way, keys of victory: defense plays better, running game starts running the ball, and I think Blake Bortles and the wide receiving core will come through. But I'm with you guys. I don't think we're going to come away with the win. I'm going to go ahead and say it's going to be 34-21, and Jaguars come back 0-4 to face the dreaded Steelers and all the Steelers fans that live in this city. So it's going to be a fun ride. Fun ride, but either way, might not be a fun ride back.
It won't be. We all pick them to lose. It's unfortunate, but we'll see. Hopefully we can bring back some positives. We really appreciate you guys listening to us. I think we walked through the ABCs of the Jacksonville Jaguars week three appearance with the Indianapolis Colts. It was an unfortunate loss for us, but we do, again, walk away with positives with the beginning of the Blake Bortles era. So we'll have plenty to watch this coming Sunday against San Diego. Again, you're listening to River City Sports Talk on RCR Radio at rcrradio.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. I am your host, Patrick Wilkins, and with me, as always, is Woody Powell and Ryan Kuiper. Guys, thanks so much. Appreciate it.